Its current state on 90.5 WKAR, the MSU Symphony Orchestra plays its first concert of the new season tomorrow night at Wharton Center. And current state's Melissa Benmark talked with the orchestra's conductor about the program and joins us now. What's up, Melissa?
Mark Kevenneau is always so much fun to talk to. He's the director of orchestras at MSU, and he always has a lot of thought-provoking things to say about the music. This particular concert features Leonard Bernstein's Overture to Candide, the Concerto in D for String Orchestra by Stravinsky, and Bartok's Concerto for Orchestra. And usually when we think of a piano, it's, you know, instrument and orchestra, piano and, or a concerto rather. It's instrument and orchestra, piano and orchestra, violin and orchestra. So my first question for Kevenneau was, what is a concerto for orchestra?
I suppose it is a dazzling display of all the things that the orchestra is capable of, featuring every section within the orchestra, so that it's not just a question of the flashiness that you might often find with a solo concerto. It's more like mining the riches of what every section in the orchestra is capable of and then finding a way to feature it, you know. In the case of the Bartok, that's a particularly famous example because the second movement, which he calls a game, which is known as the presentation of the couples, features each one of these little woodwind and then trumpet pairs to kind of show you the different characters of the orchestra. Somehow he's managed to mine out of the bassoons one of the many things that they do fantastically well, and then pass it over to the oboes, and they do that particular thing well, and then he passes it over to the flutes, and they do that thing better than anybody else, and he passes over to the trumpets, and that's what trumpets do well. So you kind of get each one of them featured, not only playing something, but playing what they're good at, you know what I mean? What seems in sync with those instruments. So I suppose that's my way of looking at it. I mean, I think it's a way of putting the whole orchestra on display. And of course, when you have that many musicians and that much wealth of palette to draw from, you can do some amazing things, especially if you're Bartok.
This also sounds like one of those pieces that you're not exactly as an instrument hiding within a larger section too much.
No, there's quite a bit of exposed playing in the Bartok. It's fiendishly difficult. There's everything. That's the thing that makes it so great. I mean, the craft of the composition of that guy is just mind-blowing. This is my second time doing it. I only did it one other time about 20 years ago. And looking at it now, I still feel, frankly, unworthy. I mean, I just look at it and I just marvel at what he's been able to do. There are times when the music is soothing. There are times when the music is challenging or kind of poking at you. There's times when it's fun. There's times when it's unbelievably triumphant. But there's this soulful Hungarian depth to it. There's this kind of Eastern European language and syntax that is so decidedly not straight up Germanic, you know? Even so much American music in many ways seems to be a variation on the Germanic. But this somehow doesn't seem to be like that. It's like sidestepped it all together. The harmonic language has its own gait to it, and it's really fascinating stuff. It's harder for us to work on because we're so steeped in this Austro-Germanic Viennese thing, you know, that's sort of our bread and butter. And when you get a chance to do something like this where it's based on a language, where the gait of the language, not just the musical language, but the vocal language, is so different, you know, you have to learn a new style of playing and a new way of hearing. So, but it's one of the great, I mean, it's clearly one of the great works of all time, and certainly one of the masterworks of the 20th century.
I was totally unfamiliar with it before this interview, and that's one of the nice things about doing these interviews is I listen to things that I wouldn't otherwise. I was struck by how rich sounding it was. That was the first thing that crossed my mind, is that it sounded rich to me in a way that I wouldn't have necessarily associated with Bartok.
Well, the orchestration is just so full. I mean, he's I don't know how to answer. He's a master. I mean, he's got the densest textures you can have, and he's got the sparsest textures, and he seems to know how to balance those in just the right way, so that you're never bored. You know what I mean? It's really a very special and exceptional piece. And not only is the talent so evident of this man and the vision, and he's got this personal voice to it, but the craft is on display, you know? Let us not forget, great composition also involves tremendous craft. And, you know, the idea that he could have just cranked this out when he was 12 or something, it's not doable. You have to practice this stuff, you know? He was obviously at the peak of his game, you know? He may not have been at the peak of his health at that moment, but he was at the peak of his game, so...
Talk a little bit about the Stravinsky. I did notice with both of these pieces that they happen to be sort of the first pieces that each composer wrote once they came to America.
I wish I could say that was on purpose. That would be really, really cool if it was, but it's not true. The interesting thing is that despite that is the case, and it's a wonderful serendipity that it works that way, neither of them have a particularly American influence or sound or anything. I mean, Stravinsky was well into his neoclassic period and had kind of mastered that. And I believe this was his last neoclassic work, and it may have even been his last tonal piece before he kind of went, some would say, off the deep end, and others would say into, you know, progress, you know. So, but they don't seem to have been in any way a reflection of their American interests or their time here. I think it's just coincidental that it turned out that way. So.
And finally, we're going backwards and forwards here, but you start the program with the Bernstein Overture to Candide, which to me is an awfully fun piece to listen to. What are the challenges involved in playing that one? I would assume rhythmic would be one of them.
Well, the rhythms aren't that hard. There's really two challenges. One is that it's quite fast, so there's just a lot of, musicians call it chops. And chops are like moving your fingers really fast, or moving your tongue really fast, or moving your arms really fast, whatever. A lot of fast playing. So I suppose that's one of the challenges, but he's such a masterful composer. He knows how to do it in such a way, again, that each instrument is doing what it's good at. And so if you work on it slowly, as we have been, it comes together quite well. And if you have a fabulous orchestra like we do, it comes together quite well. And the other challenge is not, you know, just exploding into a giddy laughter while you're in the middle of the piece, because it's just so fantastic. I mean, when I was restudying this, I had the good fortune at Indiana of doing the whole opera. So now the overture for me has this tremendous meaning. I mean, every note I can hear all the characters and where the whole thing is going, and it means so much. But when I was looking at the overture, I had this overwhelming thought. I thought, you know, this thing is a real masterpiece. And I've heard that in my head before about this overture. Oh, everybody knows Candide Overture's masterpiece. And then I thought, what are the other overtures that are at that level? And then I started thinking about it, and I have this really tiny list. That maybe, for me personally, maybe Samuel Barber, The School for Scandal, is at that list. Maybe Berlioz, Roman Carnival. And I think I'm done. Of all the overtures in the whole world, of which many are fantastic and very worthy, that I love dearly. If you're talking about the highest possible level of what an overture can be and what it can do. Oh, sorry, one more. Figaro. That's a no-brainer. And I love Giovanni, but I mean, but Candide somehow, there's a tightness of it that just dabs at you in just the right way to sort of tickle your fancy. And it also has that memorable second theme. The second theme in the overture is just unbelievable. And of course, it's one of the things that launches the syntax of the whole opera. I don't know. It's just raw Bernstein. He was just one of the most amazing composers, and I continue to feel to this day that he's underrated, that there's all this talk about him as the statesman, as the ambassador, as the conductor, and somehow the compositions are sort of in the background, and I simply will never understand it. I think he's one of the great composers of all time.
I agree. Kevin Noe, thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.
And you can hear the MSU Symphony performing in the Cobb Great Hall of Wharton Center this Friday night at 8 o'clock.